What's up, everybody? Matt Gajewski here, back again with the Osmo Fantasy Football Channel. And today we have a very special video for you guys. We are revealing our top 12 running backs. It is me. It is my friend, Matt Savoca. Matt, we've been doing these ranking reveal videos. They've been a lot of fun. We've had some good discussion. It's been a long time since I talked to you. I can't even remember the last time we did a VOD or a live stream together, but how are you, man?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited to talk running backs. Running backs still rule fantasy football. You and I know that. And yeah, I'm excited to talk the 2022 season with you, Matt. And we are going to be talking some super talented players as we count down the top 12 running backs, some of my favorite players in the league.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Of course, follow Matt on Twitter. He's at Draftaholic. I am Matt as well. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt_Gajewski. Hit that thumbs up button, subscribe before we get started. And one last thing, I want to talk to you guys about our presenting sponsor. It's Underdog. And if you've never heard of Underdog, they have all sorts of contests available to you guys. They have live drafts, pick'em contests, and best ball contests. And that's what I want to talk about today. They just released their $10 million best ball tournament. It has $1 million as a grand first place prize, and it's only $25 to enter. Better yet, we're going to give you away some free money. All you have to do is use the promo code AWESOMO, and you're going to get a match deposit bonus up to $100. So make sure to check out Underdog. That's one of my favorite tournaments, and I can't wait to enter it. But what do you say we get into these RBs?
Absolutely. Let's dig in and play those Underdog tournaments. It's an awesome. That best ball mania is just so cool.
Get it. And they go throughout the entire summer. I love just like a boring Sunday afternoon, something. Oh, why not just enter an Underdog tournament and make things a little more exciting? I end up doing that. I can't even tell you how many times throughout the summer. It's a really fun experience, but let's dive into these running backs. So we're going to start with number 12 and we're going to count our way down to number one. There are some differences between Matt and I's rankings, so we're going to use this as a consensus. We averaged our rankings together, but there will be some really good discussion, especially when we talk about number 12. This is James Conner of the Arizona Cardinals, and it's a player that I had a little bit higher than you, I believe. I'm not sure if James Conner even cracked your top 12, so I think we could talk about a couple of players in this range. But to kind of lay the case out for Conner, it essentially comes down to competition in the backfield. Chase Edmonds is gone. This team has 120 vacated carries, and behind him, it's just Eno Benjamin, and they added Keontae Ingram out of USC on day three. But aside from injury, I don't really see a way James Conner is not handling a full feature back three down workload. And when Chase Edmonds was hurt last year, he did show the ability to catch some passes, numerous games above five receptions. So I think Conner is a fantastic late bell cow that you can get. And late is probably a bit of an overstatement here. He's going to come off the board before the third round. But do you view any concerns with Conner? I know you didn't have him in your top 12. So tell me about this player.
Yeah, so let's talk about Conner as a player. I think he's in one of the best situations he's ever been in. Certainly the best situation he's been in since he was that bell cow the year he stepped in day one for Le'Veon Bell during the holdout. That's the best situation he's in. I should say, think about the running back 12, where that's going to be in most fantasy drafts strategically. It's probably going to be to the middle to the end of the second round. You're probably already going to have one player on your team at this point. And most people who are picking the running back 12 likely have another pick coming up soon enough. So this tier, I want to talk about in general as being one of the most talented tier two running back tiers we've seen in a long time. And Conner absolutely deserves his name up there. And while I don't have him at the top of this tier, I absolutely understand why you have him and other really intelligent fantasy analysts have him here at this point. The main reason I think Conner has a career year possibly ahead of him after a Pro Bowl season last year is because of Chase Edmonds' absence. Eno Benjamin is a talented player, certainly more talented than his draft capital might indicate, but I still think there is only one true workhorse running back on this team, and that's James Conner. There are a couple of concerns I have. One is in the team in general, possibly regressing in terms of overall wins. Two, Kyler Murray is still a rushing threat that absolutely could get goal line rushes. And three, I usually bet against running backs who had a touchdown rate well over expectation. But I love Conner as a player, love Conner the story after what he went through in college to get to the NFL. He is a fantastic running back on a team that expects to make the playoffs yet again. Absolutely deserves a top 12 ranking, if not a little bit lower, if you're looking at just my ranks.
Yeah, and I mean, we're splitting hairs here, so I could see Conner being 13 or 14 and just missing the ranks here, which it sounds like that's where he is for you. And ultimately, I think there's a couple players you could put at this number 12 mark. There's probably like 14 or 15 backs vying for this position in the just, this is where we split our rankings, the top 12, you know, because everyone has to start at least one back, usually two in your leagues. But I know some other names in this range. I think a lot of people have Leonard Fournette. He took a little bit of a hit on draft day with the Rashad White pick in the third round, who is a pass catching back. And Leonard Fournette had more targets than he's ever seen in his career last year. He averaged six per game, which just for reference was more than players like Christian McCaffrey on a per game basis. So we're not expecting that. That should hurt Fournette. Another player in this range is Javonte Williams. And now he's a player you ranked a little higher than me. So I at least want to touch on him before we move on from Connor. Why did you view Javonte Williams as the superior player going into 2022?
This is tough. This is really tough because Javonte Williams is one of those players who has a draft, a fantasy draft ADP higher than his projected value if you just stat out the player, if you just work out statistical projections. So your instinct is to not pick that player. But if you look at profiles of running backs who break out and have number one overall type upside, Javonte Williams and a couple other players that we might mention later in this list have that type of profile, especially with the massive quarterback upgrade. I know Melvin Gordon got re-signed, but Melvin Gordon was treated in free agency sort of like a nice-to-have player by this new front office. Remember, it's a new front office, new coach in Denver. They could absolutely just take the take the racehorse out and see what they have in Javonte Williams this year. I absolutely don't want to leave. If I have multiple fantasy drafts this year, I want him in a ranking spot where I might actually get him on some of my teams because the breakout potential is gigantic.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point with Williams. They do sign Melvin Gordon, but this is a new coaching staff. So we don't know what the split's going to look like under the new regime. I think a lot of people will just pigeonhole Williams into the role he played last year, where it was essentially a 50-50 split with Gordon. But we literally don't know what the new coaching staff thinks of these players. And you brought up a good point with the contract that Gordon received on the open market. I do think there is a chance that Javonte Williams, you know, maybe it's not quite a 100%. I mean, we don't see that anyway, but let's go on the spectrum of like a Najee Harris who gets about 80% of the carries, 80% of the targets. Maybe it's a little closer to 60-40 in the split, but even that is an improvement off what we saw last year. So a lot of upside with Williams. The reason I have James Conner one spot ahead of him, and again, it's one spot, so we're splitting hairs. It's just the security Conner has versus there are at least questions with Williams, but ultimately can't fault you with putting one of them 12, one of them 13. Any last words on these two and maybe Fournette?
Yeah, if you're at a place where you're considering running back and a bunch of the players we're talking about in this tier are available, like you're at a 2-3 turn situation, why don't you just take two and hedge your bets a little bit, because the expected value on all these running backs are great. There are a ton of wide receivers in the mid rounds we can still get to, and we'll talk about them all summer.
Yeah, for sure. Can't wait to have that discussion with you as well. Let's move to our running back number 11. It's DeAndre Swift, and he's a running back I saw in your ranks was number 10. He was previously number 12, and I honestly think I might have to bump up Swift. And it's not just because the role he plays. We love the pass catching. He's another player that averaged six targets per game when he was healthy. And we know Jamal Williams is going to be involved, but I kind of view this as an Austin Eckler situation where with that pass catching, maybe he doesn't need to have every single carry in the backfield to still bring you a lot of value. And then I dug into his attempts. He actually was over 50% of the carries, and he had 45% of the red zone attempts. That's not even factoring in the targets he received. So the opportunity for Swift was actually a little better than I anticipated going back and looking at him, just remembering what I saw the Detroit Lions do. And then he gets the offensive upgrade. They add a lot of weapons this offseason. The quarterback's the same, but Jameson Williams comes in. They sign DJ Chark, and we know Goff likes to check it down. I don't know. I keep talking myself into moving Swift up. Where do you think his ceiling is this year?
Well, he's another player like Javonte Williams whose profile fits the running backs who break out and become first-round fantasy picks in 2023 for me. So DeAndre Swift as a talent, especially coming out of Georgia, the sky's the limit for him. Now, one of the things that makes Detroit really tough is, yes, we saw the improvement in free agency and in the draft in terms of overall talent at the skill positions. But last year, We saw a lot of these players get nicked up, missing 1 to 2 games, being limited in many games, which makes projecting the opportunity going forward from a statistical standpoint actually pretty tough. I don't think Dan Campbell dislikes Jamal Williams at all. And Jamal Williams isn't actually that old. I think he's 27 or 28. And at one point, we thought Jamal Williams was going to be a bell cow running back for an Aaron Rodgers-led offense. I don't think he's a terrible player at all. He's not going away. But DeAndre Swift is a talented player on an offense that is low-key improved. As you mentioned, that's enough for me to want to get some of him, get him in my rankings so that I can compete for him at ADP. I've already mentioned that this is a tier of running back where I'm fine trying to get to 2 running backs, especially if I get wide receiver in the first round. I'm absolutely fine having it be DeAndre Swift, even though we don't expect the Lions to improve that much in terms of win totals this year.
And I think we've learned from previous years, you don't necessarily need a Najee Harris workload to have fantasy relevance. We've seen it with Aaron Jones. We've seen it with Austin Eckler. And we do expect the Lions to be a little more high-powered at least. And last year, DeAndre Swift only had 20-plus touches on 5 occasions. Some of those were the Jamal Williams games where he was out. I do think with that said, even with a healthy Jamal Williams, you could be looking at that like 17-touch range with a lot of them coming via targets. And I think the Lions will be improved, but I also don't think they're going to go out there, win 8 games. The division they play in is not necessarily the best, but you still have the Vikings. You still have the Packers projected ahead of them. So there is a little bit of growth that this offense could sustain. And I still think they're probably going to be playing from behind and throwing the ball more than, you know, your average team here. Anything else to add?
Actually, I think Goff is a boon this year for DeAndre Swift, not necessarily a negative. Yes, it would be great if the team scored more touchdowns, but if you're talking about distributing the opportunity and you're going to say the team is coming from behind and that means more targets, that means more dump offs from Jared Goff to the running back, DeAndre Swift time.
Love that fit there. Let's move on to our next running back. It is running back number 10. We have Aaron Jones. He kind of fits the same profile as DeAndre Swift, just in a far more explosive offense. Last year, we saw A.J. Dillon, a former second-round pick for this team, a late second-round pick. He was drafted in the 60s out of Boston College, come in and handle a large workload for this team, but it mostly came on the ground. Where I think Aaron Jones has his success is through the air, and I think there's a reasonable expectation that we could project him for more than the 4.3 targets he saw per game last year. They lost Davante Adams. They draft Christian Watson at the top of the second round, trade up for him. But that's still one replacement who's coming in from an FCS school, still not even with first round draft capital. When we saw Davante Adams injured out of games last year, Aaron Jones' targets spiked massively. And I think there's a chance they just use him as an extension of the run game through the air. It seems like you and I are both still pretty high on Aaron Jones. And the difference between Jones and Swift for me is entirely the offense. Is that the case for you as well?
Yeah, and one thing that we really like to see is that Aaron Jones, despite not being the quote unquote goal line hammer of his two running back, the running back tandem he plays on, we've seen massive touchdown upside. He had 4 touchdown games last year. So yeah,
through the air too, man, they use him around the goal line and through the air. It's crazy.
And now, you know, they were creative with Davante Adams at the goal line. They are going to have to get creative with Aaron Jones, who in my opinion is the best pass catcher on their roster right now. Like Sammy Watkins, like I hope Christian Watson becomes everything the Packers want him to be, but we don't know. As you said, pick 34, 35, those players become T. Higgins, Michael Pittman. Sometimes they flame out here. Sometimes they're Dorial Green Beckham or Jalen Reagor. So, you know, it really is still up in the air. And I kind of feel like, you know what you have in Alan Lazard and kind of Sammy Watkins when he's healthy is fine. Aaron Jones is the best pass catcher on this team, and Aaron Rodgers better figure out a way to creatively use him. If they do, he could lead the NFL, at least the running back position, in targets. That's why he's so high on the list here.
I actually don't have anything else to add. I think you said it very well with Aaron Jones. A lot of upside for him, even though he kind of occupies that DeAndre Swift, Austin Eckler role, where maybe they don't see all the carries, but they get the high-value touches near the red zone in through the air. Let's move on to running back number 9. We have Saquon Barkley of the New York Giants. You might not be able to see the logo because of that color contrast on the screen, but we're going to talk about Barkley nonetheless. The story with him has basically been injuries over the last couple of years. He excelled under the Eli Manning regime, and that's really how long it's been since this guy had sustained success because of the injuries. Last year, he actually appeared in 13 games, but the efficiency wasn't there, playing behind a pitiful New York Giants offensive line. Now they've made improvements and they've changed coaches. They have Brian Daboll coming in from Buffalo, so we're expecting at least an uptick in pass attempts and efficiency with the offense as a whole. My main concern with Barkley is I don't know how the new coaching staff uses him. Even last year, Barkley only handled 64% of the position's rushing attempts in games he played. For reference, Devontae Booker, he had 46%. In the red zone, Devontae Booker actually had more of the red zone carries on just an overall basis. It was 15 for Booker, 11 for Barkley. And again, Barkley played in 13 games. For me, it comes down to, have the injuries started to really limit Barkley? Because when he's fully healthy, I think he has that sort of Christian McCaffrey type ceiling. It's just we haven't seen it in a while. And man, I don't know a worse indictment than having Devontae Booker split the backfield with you. What do you make of that situation?
I think Barkley may have made a mistake in terms of thinking about his wallet, that putting injured play on tape, because there was no way after that week 5, I believe, injury in Dallas where he got that ankle twisted up, the same kind of ankle injury that basically limited Lamar, took Lamar out for the rest of the season. When you twist an ankle like that and you're a dynamic player, it's done. And in my opinion, he wasn't the same after that. And the Giants knew it. But from a fantasy perspective, Saquon Barkley is in your lineup when he's playing. So it was a terrible situation for fantasy. You said it. He was number 21 among running backs last year in expected fantasy points per game. That's what happens when you lose goal line opportunity to Devontae Booker. I still think when fully healthy, there are very few athletes I want at the running back position in the NFL other than Saquon Barkley. He might be the best athlete at the position, again, when 100% healthy.
You said it. I think the injury is a huge key here. There are just a lot of players that we're going to talk about ahead of Barkley that haven't shown the ceiling. Now, with Barkley, you're making a bet on him getting back to that ceiling, but it is legit that Christian McCaffrey type upside. He's an excellent pass catcher and he's explosive. He creates the sort of big runs that you expect out of a Derrick Henry type. Blending that skill set is worth the number one overall pick. And we've actually seen Saquon Barkley drafted there in previous drafts. It's just been some time since that has occurred. So right now you see him slipping down rankings a little bit. And fortunately, you don't have to draft Barkley in the top 5. You can get him at the 1-2 turn sometimes later, and he could even be your RB2 depending on the construction of your running back room. So I like Barkley a lot. I think there's a chance he gets back to that number one RB for fantasy purposes. Let's move to number 8. It's Alvin Kamara, and there's some off-the-field concerns with Kamara. There could be a potential suspension looming. I think we should talk about it maybe from both standpoints. I don't think he's going to end up with like a full season or something, but in a full season of Kamara, he's been inside the top 5. I think for me, he's down a little bit because of risk. We saw his usage change a little bit last year, and maybe you can speak to this. The Saints, under Jameis Winston, decided to fully embrace the run, and even when Jameis Winston was healthy, that was the case. They were 29th in pass rate when adjusted for neutral game scripts. We saw the carry spike for Kamara. He was up at 18.5 per game, and his targets dropped to 5.2 per game. That's still a pretty healthy mark, but still it's not the previous usage we saw out of Kamara. Are you expecting this usage to be similar in 2022? I know Jameis Winston comes back. Or do you foresee the offense changing under the new regime?
Yeah, so Dennis Allen comes in as a new coach. They actually keep continuity at the offensive coordinator position. So that isn't exactly great if you're expecting Alvin Kamara to return to some sort of Drew Brees-esque usage under the new coaching staff. But if you look at expected fantasy points per game, the opportunities that he got on the ground were enough to sort of make this up for me. He was number 2 in XFP per game at 17.9. Now, number 2 is usually a little bit higher than that. If you look at the running back position and that stat, it's usually around 19 per game. I hope Kamara or somebody can get up to that level. But there is also the concern that they start to use Jameis Winston a little bit more Tampa Bay-esque with Chris Olave and Michael Thomas in the lineup. They just had a terrible receiving core last year. I mean, Marcus Callaway, Traquan Smith, a third-round pick. It just didn't work at all. Kamara, again, one of those situations where he might be, I mean, Thomas went healthy, but he's definitely the second best pass catcher on his team. And so even when playing from behind, you know he's going to get that opportunity. In terms of who am I comfortable having as my running back one, Kamara is probably the last on that list if we think that he has a chance of playing all season. One thing I want to say is that I certainly am no legal expert by any stretch, but what we have seen is that as court cases stretch out, the NFL is usually waiting for the legal system to play out before they make their call. That's all I will say about the fact that there is a possibility that Kamara's suspension actually moves to another season.
That's a good point. I literally have him this low because of the risk. If you told me he was going to play 16 games, I think I would rank him ahead of players that we'll talk about in a little bit, like Joe Mixon. It is close, but ultimately it is the suspension risk that drops him down. You highlighted all the positives for Kamara. Even if it's a run-heavy offense, they're using him on the ground. If they decide to go a little bit pass-heavier, he has that upside through the air. Let's move on to RB number 7. It is the aforementioned Joe Mixon. I would prefer Kamara to Mixon straight up if you could guarantee all the games played. It's you as well. Yep. Mixon had really solid metrics last year. Cincinnati was fairly run heavy to start the year, and they embraced the pass a little more down the stretch with Burrow as he was further removed from the season-ending knee injury the previous year, tore a bunch of ligaments there. But from an opportunity perspective, Mixon was dominant in the early part of the year. He handled 80.5% of the positional attempts. He was at 71% of the red zone attempts. He averaged 3 targets per game, which was an upgrade on what we'd seen him put on the field previously. Efficiency was an issue for him. And now I want to ask you, do you think this was the offensive line? We saw a lot of the offensive line concerns voiced with Joe Burrow specifically taking sacks. We saw that as an issue in the Super Bowl specifically. But I think it also might have limited Mixon's efficiency a little bit here. What do you think of that situation?
I think it's possible. I mean, we had stretches where Joe Mixon was absolutely unstoppable in the middle of the season from week 8 to week 12. He had 4 top 4 running back performances in 4 games played. I do think he is tied to the quality of his offense in a way that makes me a little bit nervous for running back 1. And I knew as the Bengals made this playoff run and eventually made it all the way to the Super Bowl that I was getting annoyed because I knew Joe Mixon and Joe Burrow and his weapons were going to be inflated in terms of ADP the following year. We are paying a little bit of a premium. He was number 10 in expected fantasy points per game at 15.4 half PPR expected fantasy points per game. I will mention that after that number 10 mark, there's a huge tier break. The next player at 11 is down a whole expected fantasy point lower. So the opportunities are there. When Cincinnati is playing well, we got to add that they play in one of the toughest divisions in football. He's a year older. And again, he hasn't been the beacon of health throughout his career. He makes me nervous. But if you're talking about coming out of a fantasy draft with him as a running back 1 and one of these players at 8 through 12 as my running back 2, I still feel pretty darn good.
Yeah, I do as well. I like the offensive line additions. They bring in Lyle Collins. They bring in Ted Karras. Think what you will of him. He at least has experience. And they didn't add anybody to the backfield. They're still working with Samaje Perine behind him, kind of a journeyman at this point in his career. A day 3 sophomore and Chris Evans, who's essentially just a scat back pass catcher. And they paid Mixon the big bucks already. So I don't really see a way they move away from him as the 3 down workhorse. It's just, like you said, a function of the offense. They will be playing a much more difficult schedule this year. They finished first in that division, whereas previously they were playing a last place schedule last year. So the schedule will be harder. Let's move to RB6. This is where things start to get really fun. It's Najee Harris. I think he's just a little bit more of a souped up version of Joe Mixon. When you look at everything on the profile, he has slightly more attempts overall, slightly more targets overall than Mixon. And essentially he's playing that 3 down role, but he's really the engine of the offense. Whereas in Mixon's case, it's Jamar Chase, it's T. Higgins. In Pittsburgh, it was Najee Harris. He averaged 5.5 targets per game, 18.1 carries per game. This team actually played with solid tempo. They were 9th overall in terms of pace, and they were still fairly pass-heavy, even with Ben Roethlisberger under center. Personally, I don't see how Kenny Pickett could possibly be a downgrade from Ben Roethlisberger. Maybe he's a lateral move. What do you expect this offense to look like with the new quarterback, whether it's Trubisky, whether it's Pickett? And do you think Najee retains that bell cow feature back work like we saw last year? Because he had probably the best role in all of football.
So a couple things here. One, it's not just because my future wife is from Pittsburgh, I swear, but How class is that organization that they told their quarterback prospects or quarterback free agents that they might take a quarterback in round one so that they already knew that they were coming in to a quarterback competition? Number two, how class is an organization that has their Hall of Fame quarterback retire? And by the way, he was a shell of himself last year. And sets up a quarterback, a legitimate quarterback competition so that they may be able to compete in one of the toughest divisions in football right after he retires. And three, I don't see how it gets worse for Najee Harris from an opportunity or from a win standpoint. Like, they're going to get better as a team, most likely. They're going to get better as an offense, most likely. They're going to get more creative as an offense, regardless of the quarterback that's in there. Also want to add that the Bills organization was clamoring about Mitch Trubisky getting another opportunity. They think the Bears just whiffed it in their opportunity to try to mold Trubisky, and that the Steelers might have gotten a huge win signing him. All that said, if you're going to give me the most opportunity share in the NFL on a more improved offense, this is the start of the big six for me. I want one of these six running backs as my running back one. All of these top six players have a clear-cut first-round grade. I have no problem spending my first pick in fantasy drafts. Najee Harris starts that list. He could have a career year in year two for Pittsburgh.
Absolutely, and I think people might knock the offense. Opportunity is what matters. We've seen James Robinson, undrafted free agent, James Robinson in his first year, turn in an RB1 season with the Jacksonville Jaguars. The situation's far better than that. And outside of injury, I don't really see a situation where Harris is giving up any work in this backfield. He's an excellent pass catcher. We know what he can do between the tackles, and essentially the volume's going to be there. The difference between Harris and some of the backs that we'll talk about in the top five could be that efficiency, could be that touchdown number at the end of the year because of the offenses that some of these future guys play in. But ultimately, I'm very comfortable with Harris as well. Anything else to add on that?
Yeah, they're probably going to be better than 29th overall as PFF graded them as an offense. So,
man, they made the playoffs with that offense.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Exactly. So that defense is still set up for success. Don't be surprised if Najee Harris is close to the league lead in touchdowns if he stays healthy all year.
I agree with you. Let's move on to RB5. We have Dalvin Cook. I think he's been a top five running back by consensus for the last couple of years. There's no real qualms with that. With Cook, I think the question is, how high do you actually put him? And I think a lot of people will rank him higher than this. I have one major concern, and I want to get your opinion on this. Cook's target volume has dropped. It was down at 3.8 targets per game. The carries were still very high at 19.2. He's actually at 81% of the team's running back carries and 72.5% of their red zone attempts. I think that makes a lot of sense. They drafted Alexander Mattison to purely be their handcuff. They have a new regime coming in now. My question to you is, what do you think Cook's usage looks like? Because if he's only going to see 3.8 targets per game, I think number five is about right. I think he needs to kind of get up into that like five target per game to really crush the top four outside of injury. What do you think?
I think that's fair. Kevin O'Connell comes in from the Sean McVay coaching scheme here. And I hate to use a very like easy analogy from a comparison standpoint, but I think Dalvin Cook has Todd Gurley upside this year. The offense is probably going to get slightly more pass heavy, slightly more creative, but I think the opportunities that he may lose with the team going a little bit more through the air than on the ground may be made up from goal line opportunities, from opportunities to score. I still think Alexander Mattison, his only real competition is, as you said, a pure handcuff. And Cook is only 27 years old, a fantastic athlete coming out of Florida State in the second round. This does kind of feel like the last hurrah for that elite running back class of 2017. After that, we're going to have to put them in the are they kind of old category. Not saying they're going to fall off a cliff anytime soon, but this absolutely could be Dalvin Cook's career year with a ton of continuity and kind of the AFC North more up for grabs than it's been in a long time.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. We just talked about Joe Mixon in that running back class. I kind of feel the same way about him in terms of last
North,
hurrah.
Sorry, I said AFC, but sorry.
Oh, NFC North, AFC North. NFC North, honestly, is probably a bottom two division in football when it's all said and done. So I think it's solid for Dalvin Cook. He's going to have some very winnable games, ideally playing with positive game script. I hope the coaching change can be a benefit to him in the entire offense. I kind of want to talk about Cook in conjunction with the next two players on our list. I think there's a tier break after two, so maybe we can talk about Cook as like a comparison to the next two guys we talk about, which brings me to number four. You and I both have Derrick Henry in this spot. It's a little lower than consensus. I mean, we're top five here, so we're splitting hairs either way. But with Henry, you know what the usage looks like. He's going to receive an immense amount of carries. It's a very run-heavy offense. They were 30th in pass rate in neutral game scripts. Henry averaged 27 and a half carries per game. With that said, he actually had more targets than I thought when he was healthy. He averaged 2.5 targets per game. For reference, that's about one target less than Dalvin Cook on a per game basis. So Henry's not the best pass catcher, but he's also not a non-factor in that realm. He did see an increase there. From a pure touch perspective, I think Henry is the guy that's going to average more touches than anyone else in the NFL when healthy. It's just so many of them come from carries, which are a lesser value than the targets overall. But between Cook, between Henry, maybe talk about both these players and how they compare to each other and where you view them side by side, perhaps.
Yeah, I think the usage guarantee is so high for a healthy Derrick Henry that it really doesn't make a lot of sense to put a player like Dalvin Cook ahead of him. Honestly, Najee has a better argument for being put ahead of Derrick Henry if you're just going off of pure usage. But honestly, this human being is the hardest running back to tackle in the NFL. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, no one on earth wants to tackle him. He was still number two in the NFL in juke rate, which is evaded tackles per touch, and total evaded tackles. He was number three in the NFL. Guys, he was on IR. Like, he missed half the year. Like, it's unbelievable how much he is able to add in terms of yardage simply because of forced missed tackles. There's nobody like him. And you do run an offense around a player like that for as long as you possibly can. Derrick Henry is still one of the best players in the NFL, even entering his age. He's going to be like 28 and a half when the season starts this season, this year. So I do get concerned that it will be a swift fall off when it eventually happens for Derrick Henry, because he just won't have the speed, which we actually saw when he came back. He just like didn't have the requisite speed. He just looked like a plotter out there. But when healthy, he's one of the scariest running backs on earth, and he's going to have a whole offense based around him. It's good enough. Absolutely. He definitely creates another tier for me. But as I said, this whole big six is fine as RB1 on my teams.
For sure. I think the sort of, I don't know how to put this, like reduced efficiency at the end of the season was predictable. He rushed back from that injury. And we see that a lot with players that rush back. You really want them rehabbing, getting up to full speed before they go back out there. I think we saw the same thing with Cam Akers. And for age, I think Derrick Henry's been able to be a little more successful later in his career because he didn't have those massive workloads in college at Alabama. And he didn't even to begin his career.
Matt LaFleur, man.
What's that?
DeMarco Murray led the league in rushing on the Titans with Derrick Henry sitting on the bench.
Dude, Matt LaFleur, when he was there as offensive coordinator, love Matt LaFleur, Packers head coach, of course. He was putting him in a 50-50 timeshare with old man Deion Lewis.
Deion, oh, wow. What terrible times.
Anyway, I remember those days now, frustrated. Myself, probably you and everybody else was with Matt LaFleur using Deion Lewis over Derrick Henry, but he doesn't have as much work in his career as some other backs. So I think he can get it done for one more year. I love the volume that he is going to receive. And I think there's a very real chance he could be RB1 if everything breaks his way, likely coming with touchdowns. Let's move to RB3. We are in the big three now. Austin Eckler, a player that we need to talk about a lot here because we're going to have him higher than consensus based on your rankings, based on my rankings. And I think the main thing here is we need to talk about him in conjunction with Cook and Derrick Henry. Because a lot of people are going to rank Henry higher, but their usage is vastly different. Austin Eckler is a player who last year averaged 12.9, we'll call it 13 carries per game, but he also averaged 6 targets. So he's ceding about 9-10 touches per game to Derrick Henry, but he's making that up with the high value touches that we want. It's coming via the air, it's coming via targets. And now this LA Chargers offense continues to improve. They add to the offensive line. You have Justin Herbert ascending. And along with the targets, this team is so pass heavy. They were 4th in pass rate in neutral game scripts. They were top 5 in tempo. There's just a lot to like about the offense. You're getting an attachment to that, and you're getting it in the right ways. Talk to me about Eckler versus Henry and Cook.
I legitimately think Austin Eckler, when all is said and done, could end up as the number one overall flex player in fantasy. First of all, talk about continuity. This guy, even from the Philip Rivers era in Los Angeles, San Diego even, he has been contributing from an efficiency standpoint as one of the best in the league. And for the last three seasons, he has been sixth or better in PPR fantasy points per game. Now, obviously, I've been looking at this from a half PPR standpoint in general. And so PPR, he's even better in that format. But regardless of what format you're playing, Eckler, as you mentioned, is on the best offense he's ever played on, in my opinion, and he's in the best division he's ever played within. So what that means is not just the Chargers could win a ton of games, be scoring a lot of touchdowns in the process, and Austin Eckler is a beneficiary of that, but also if they're behind to offenses like Patrick Mahomes-led offense or teams with Devontae Adams, Darren Waller, and Hunter Renfrow, or Russell Wilson, Jerry Jeudy, and Cortland Sutton, and they're going to need to pass a whole lot, which means dump-offs, once again, to Austin Eckler. I think the opportunity is there. Isaiah Spiller sounds like he has an inside chance to win that number two job, but I think he's more of a pure handcuff. If Eckler gets the bell cow load and that team improves, sky's the absolute limit. He can be number one overall.
He reminds me a lot of a player we're going to talk about next, and I do view there being a tier break, but it wouldn't be too surprising to see him have that Christian McCaffrey-type workload. Christian McCaffrey is not the biggest back either. He was just north of 200 pounds coming out of college, and Carolina threw him into that workload. Now, injuries have been a concern for him, but Eckler, he's also just above 200 pounds, the excellent pass catcher we've seen, and he's explosive. I'm sure you guys have seen some of the workout videos of Eckler. He's on that like Alvin Kamara spectrum of just like one of the most phenomenal athletes you could possibly imagine. Anything else to add with Eckler or the big three backs we just talked about?
One of my favorite stories, just one of my favorite things about football, UDFA coming out of nowhere to just be an absolute elite superstar, like little Barry Sanders light out there. It's the coolest thing.
I love it as well. All right, top two backs. I think there's consensus here, but I do think this is a tier of its own. Our number two back, and where you're widely going to see him across the industry, is Christian McCaffrey of the Carolina Panthers. He would be number one if you could guarantee health, but that is not something we've seen from McCaffrey over the last couple of years. He has the single best role in fantasy football when fully healthy, and it comes via his role in the passing game. Last year, it was diminished a little bit, but it's really hard to evaluate because when McCaffrey was out there, there were multiple games where he didn't even finish. So 14.1 carries per game, 5.9 targets per game. He didn't finish all of his games, so it's really hard to even look at those metrics. So you essentially have to go back two full seasons to look at McCaffrey's workload. So for me, it essentially is entirely injury-based. If you could guarantee me McCaffrey plays 16 games, he's the number one overall player in fantasy football. What do you think about that?
Bottom line is, if you look at the last 20 years and you look at ADP, the running back one overall has played on average 13.8 games. The running back two on average has played 13.4 games. We don't know anything about injury viability, injury probability. If you're telling me that his usage is the most valuable usage of any running back at his position and he scores the most fantasy points, put him on my fantasy team. I mean, I get it. He burned players two straight seasons because of the unavailability. But in the four games that he played 55% of snaps or more last season, he finished as a top four running back in fantasy scoring. If you get him on the field enough, he's just unstoppable. And from a floor and ceiling standpoint, you really can't get anything better from one fantasy player than Christian McCaffrey. It's enough of a risk. I feel like he's 102 simply because of the injury risk. If there was none, he would be 101.
I agree with that 100%. And the way I kind of like to talk to people about this, if you're playing multiple leagues, I think you take Jonathan Taylor number one. And then if you get a second overall pick and you end up with McCaffrey, great. If you're playing one league and you really want to shoot for that ceiling, I think it's fine to take McCaffrey number one. And again, if you're taking Taylor over him, I think it's just a diversification strategy rather than a player take. You can get McCaffrey at two in almost any draft. If you're playing a ton of drafts, you just want to take the value with Taylor number one. Take McCaffrey number two when you get him, and that way you're diversified. And that injury doesn't absolutely demolish you if McCaffrey does sustain another one. Anything else to add, particularly on that strategy? That's kind of how I like to break it down.
You'll see it soon enough when the expert consensus rankings come out on awesomeo.com. But I actually have Eckler ahead of McCaffrey. I think your draft strategy, I agree with 100% still with where McCaffrey is going on average, but Eckler is the player I have projected slightly higher.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. For me, it comes down to availability, and we've seen Eckler be available when we have not for McCaffrey. So I think McCaffrey could ultimately end up like anywhere in the top five, and it probably comes down to how many games you project him to play. So it's a little bit of a wild card, a lot of volatility, but the risk reward, it's certainly there. Let's talk about number one, Jonathan Taylor. We kind of already mentioned him in conjunction with McCaffrey. With him, he's been available, and I think that's what gives him the edge. He is one of the best workloads in football, and I think you could continue to see this increase. Last year, averaged 19.5 carries per game, 3 targets per game. That's 77.5% of the running back attempts. He was at 80% of the rushing attempts inside the red zone. And this offense is getting better. I love the addition of Matt Ryan. He historically has been a quarterback, very willing to check down to the running back position. And I think last year we saw Jonathan Taylor just play so well that the team couldn't use Nyheim Hines. I know they signed Nyheim to a contract that suggests he would have a role, but at a certain point, like, Jonathan Taylor is just playing so well out there that it is costing you expected points to bring him off the field in favor of Nyheim Hines, even if Nyheim Hines might have the slightly better skill set in the pass game. What do you think about Taylor overall? Is he your RB1, and what do you think happens for 2022?
Jonathan Taylor just deserves to be the running back one this year. Number one in total carries, number one in red zone touches, number one in total touchdowns among running backs, number one in yards created, number three in yards created per touch. So his per touch efficiency was insane. Number one in rushes of 10 plus yards. So his ability to break out and have a breakaway run as good as anybody in the NFL. He did have a very positive game script. So a player profiler measures how often the team is ahead or how far ahead they are. And it is an indicator that they were in situations where they could just lean on the rush a ton in ways that we can't guarantee from year to year. Even with Matt Ryan dumping it off to his running back being a possible boon for him, I do think there are some efficiency concerns here. He's an unbelievable talent. I loved him as a prospect coming out. Again, deserves the number one running back spot. Do I need him in drafts to feel good? No. Am I going to pay some mega premium if I'm playing some sort of auction draft above Christian McCaffrey, Austin Eckler, Derrick Henry? No. I think all these players should probably go right around the same value in whatever league you're playing. Jonathan Taylor is fantastic and easily finish as the number one back, but it isn't a must-have player like some running back one overalls we've had in the past.
I mean, they always bring risk. We've seen a couple of former number one overall picks really bust. McCaffrey's at the forefront of our memories over the last 2 years. But Saquon Barkley occupied the same role, and he never paid off either. There are situations, injury, reduced efficiency, whatever it may be, for all these backs. And I think once you get inside the top six, you're trying to balance this safety versus upside, which is why McCaffrey ends up being so high, the pure upside. But a guy like Taylor just has such a solid blend of the two that it's really hard to rank him below the number one overall position with that safety he brings, with that upside he brings as well. So that's why he's number one for me. Anything else to add on Taylor or really any of the backs in the top five, top six?
What a talented running back group we have in the NFL suddenly. I was looking at this trying to get to 12 and looking at like 1 through 24, really. We have young, talented, highly touted prospects, not old. And you know what's funny? We talked about the running back dead zone for so many years in drafts now. It's sort of sifted its way out. And now suddenly we have this influx of talent. I want all these guys, as many of these guys, especially this top 12. This was super fun, Matt.
Oh, man. And we're going to do future videos. We didn't even talk about Dobbins, Cam Akers, the rookies, Travis Etienne coming back. There's a ton to talk about, which we will do in future videos. Before we head out of here, make sure to leave a comment. Let us know what you think of our top 12. Who's too high, who we forgot, or who you particularly like ahead of the 2022 season. Hit the thumbs up button on the way out. Again, he is Matt Savoca. You can follow him on Twitter at Draftaholic. I am Matt Gajewski. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt_Gajewski. Thank you guys for watching. This was the Osmo Fantasy Football YouTube channel. Make sure to tune in all throughout the offseason. We'll have all sorts of content for you guys. But until then, we will see you next time.